Okay, we're going to be back in just a moment. This hour, we're going to take phone calls with Catherine right here on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine, you've got a great voice.
Well, thank you. Maybe that'll be my backup career when all this privacy stuff
we'll get you together with
bankrupts me.
Do you know how many Coast guests are great singers? We've got you out there, Christian Wilde, David Wilcock. I was at an event with him Saturday near San Leandro, California. He plays the flute.
Well, we need to get everybody together and do like the big Coast to Coast album. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be funny.
Release a what is it nowadays? An MP3?
Yeah.
A series of MP3s on an album.
Funny. And I
That'd
do.
Be great.
I do my Elvis song. I do one.
You all can right. Lead us all.
Are you ready for phones?
I am.
We're gonna go to Smithfield, Rhode Island. Chris, first time caller. Chris, thanks for calling. Good morning.
Hi, George. Hi, Catherine. George, I just wanted to tell you, in Rhode Island, there are two national banks that if you want to cash a check at that bank, they fingerprint you and they charge you $5.
Now, the fingerprinting I've seen done, charging you, I've never seen that. That's amazing.
Well, there are all kinds of IDs, so they really don't need to fingerprint you. I think they fingerprint you to make you feel like a criminal.
Well, you know what? You never know. You never know. Catherine, that's happening all over the place then, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it depends on which part of the country you live in. Some places are more prone to doing that than others. But the idea is that if you are caught passing a bad check, that they can then take that fingerprint and verify that you are or are not the person whose name appears on the check. You know, the problem, of course, is once we get used to fingerprinting, and you know, we adults, I think, still kind of recoil at being asked to give a fingerprint. But you got to realize that school kids across the country are routinely giving their fingerprints to get school lunches. You know, talk about Pavlovian response. You know, you ring the bell and the dog salivates. You know, we've got kids literally associating pressing their finger onto a government-run fingerprint reader at their school with receiving food. So, you know, when those guys get older, when those, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth graders become adults and the bank says, hey, we want a fingerprint, they're just going to go, okay, where do you want me to press? You know, they're not even going to think about it. So I think that's one of the reasons why those of us who remember a time when it was not normal to show a fingerprint for any purpose other than criminal activities, that we need to speak out, speak up, and oppose the use of fingerprinting before it becomes sort of the de facto normal in our country.
All right, Chris, any more questions for you?
Yeah, one more comment, George.
Sure thing.
And Catherine. One thing I do is I pick up shopper cards off the ground and use them, and then I drop mine on the ground so people can use mine, so that I might be using somebody else's shopping card. If they use mine, that'll screw up all their figures on who's buying what.
Yeah, if you've got to use a shopper card, that's a great idea. I have always recommended people to withhold their shopping dollars from the companies that impose those kind of tracking schemes on them. I know a lot of people now don't live in a part of the country where there is an alternative, but if you can find an alternative, even if you have to drive a little further or pay a little bit more, I tell people use your money because that's sort of the sunlight for these companies. That's what keeps them alive. Use your money to support the good companies and starve the bad ones.
I agree wholeheartedly.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Let's go to the NighthawkZone.com. It's Holly. Hey, Holly, how are you?
Good. How are you, George?
Good. Everybody doing well over there?
Yeah, they're doing great. I haven't been online because I'm having computer problems.
But, oh, no, that happens.
I was inspired last year by Catherine Albrecht's last appearance. And so I wanted to sing her a little part of a little jingle that I wrote.
Oh, great. Go for it.
Okay. I'm a little nervous because I don't sing that well. And so I'll try. Oh, you better watch out. You better not die. Better not go about not telling you why Big Brother is already around. He knows what you've been posting. He knows when you're online. He owns the site that's hosting, so you better pay your bills on time. That's just the beginning, anyway.
Not bad. Talented people over at the Nighthawk Zone.
That's fabulous. And speaking of knowing what you're posting, you know that that Google now is a co-investor along with the CIA in this company that is called Future Report, I think. This company is boasting that they can create instant dossiers on anybody in the country. And it's the first time we've actually found that Google and the CIA are working together on a project. They literally, we can assemble actual real-time dossiers on people, is from the CEO of this company. It's called Recorded Future. So yeah, they do know what you've been posting. And one quick quote, just because I think this is important for people to realize, we've got former head of the CIA saying, hey, it's always great when we can find information that people were dumb enough to leave online. So if you're posting online, you better bear in mind that Google and the CIA are probably both watching you.
Absolutely. Okay, we go to Bill, truck driving in Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Bill, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. It's great to hear this conversation, you know,
because sure
as a truck driver here, we have to give up our Social Security number to get our CDL license. We have to give our fingerprints to get our hazmat license. All our trucks are equipped with GPS so the companies know where you are. Every truck's equipped now with a speed pass so you don't have to pay when you go through the tolls. And, you know, I'm up and down the East Coast here all the time, and every time I stop into, like, a Rite Aid or something, then I have to, if I want to get a prescription, I have to give them my driver's license, and they scan that. I mean, it's just getting crazy.
It is.
Yeah, and, you know, transportation workers were one of the first groups hit by all of this stuff. The TWIC, the Transportation Worker Identification Card, I think it's called. Anybody working in federal transit had to have one of these cards. They're RFID enabled. They're spy chipped and very, very invasive. So, yeah, we're hearing this not only from truck drivers. We're hearing this from cab drivers. In New York, there was a big flap when the cab driver said, no, we don't want GPS tracking devices in our cars. We don't want the government to know where we're picking people up and dropping people off. But last time I was in New York, not only do they have the GPS tracking devices now mandated by law in every single cab, keeping track of where they go, but they've also got an RFID reader in every single cab, so you can conveniently wave your credit card with its RFID chip in it. And I should point out that chip in your credit card is just one step away from the chip in your hand. The infrastructure is being built.
Stephen is in Medford, Oregon. Go ahead, Stephen. Welcome to the program. You're up with us.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was pretty interested in the whole fact that you're talking about these white vans that are emitting, watching in major
these
cities.
These X-ray vans, yeah.
Yeah, these X-ray vans, yeah. I used to be a vet tech for a long time. Now I actually professionally kill animals for the federal government. I would say that wouldn't it be kind of strange that I know the basis of control in this country has gone way too far. I believe I've heard this whole story about the RFID chips, like, already many times in your program. I listen to it all the time. And I was wondering, like, wouldn't it be kind of coincidental that being around X-rays a lot of the time can actually mess with the genomes in your DNA, that it can actually influence? But there's already enough frequencies that are emitted through cell phones and different forms of multimedia in this country, and that by emitting these things, they actually take away from, like, they actually break up the frequencies that your mind really works off of, because considering that it's basically just a giant electromagnet. I can tell you, George, I want to know a lot. I listen to your program all the time. When I was 10 years old, I was hit by lightning, and ever since then, the frequency of my brain has changed, and I've been able to manipulate metal and frequencies around me.
Well, you're lucky it didn't kill you, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, I don't want to waste all your time, but me and my family were actually we were sitting outside watching a storm because it's kind of a family thing, you know. We were watching the lightning, and it was all really fun. And then it started getting really rough. You know, the wind started kicking up, so my family told me, oh, we got to go inside, and I had to go and grab my bike. So I went outside, and the last thing I remember is seeing a flash of light. And I found myself 100 yards away from that with third-degree burns all over the front part of my body. And ever since then, I've been able to do many different things. I found myself as a veterinarian. I'm now a holistic healer, an alchemist, and I work with a lot of different medicine. And I understand that many different things. I was listening at 3
o'clock. Okay, got to run. Thanks for the call, though. Remarkable. A lot of things, huh? Let's go to Atlanta, Georgia, east of the Rockies. Go ahead. You're up with us, Alice.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say God bless both of you for everything you do.
Well, you're welcome. So, thank you.
Thank you, Alice.
I had a question. I got a shelter puppy, and she's about 10 months old now. And, you know, they're so thrilled to tell you that they're all microchipped. You don't have anything to do with it. If you get the dog, you've got the microchip. but I was wondering, is it extensive surgery to have it removed? Would it be advisable to do that, or?
Yeah, it actually is extensive surgery, and I would refer you to our chipmenot.com website. That's the brand new website launching tomorrow, where we have all of the stories of the dogs and the impact of the microchips. And there are a number of dogs that have actually had the microchips removed, and when you take a look at the pictures, the scar runs all the way down, or the stitches run all the way down their backs.
I mean,
it's really invasive surgery. What we're hoping to do, and one of the goals with our Chip Me Not website and our new campaign, is to get these animal shelters and all of the communities around the country that are mandating these microchips, that are requiring you, if you want to get an animal, you have to get a microchip in that animal. We're trying to get them to leave it at the owner's discretion. So you would be able to say, hey, I'd like to adopt this shelter animal, but I don't want a microchip. And by the way, in my own case, I wanted to adopt a dog. I went down to my local animal shelter. In fact, I also wanted to adopt a cat because my cat recently passed on.
Oh.
And at the shelter, I found two animals that I really, really liked. And I said, I'd love to get these animals, but I don't want a chip. And they said, sorry, we won't let you adopt these animals. And to my mind, that was crazy, because what they're really saying is we would prefer these animals to run the risk of being put to sleep in the shelter than to give them to a loving, caring family and a loving pet owner mm-hmm. without a microchip. So their desire for the microchip seems to be trumping even their care for the animals, and I think that's just very strange.
But we're trying
to change that.
I give donations to the local animal shelter, you know, on a fairly regular basis. If I put a note in when I mail that in and said, you know, I don't want this to be used for microchipping, would that make any difference?
Well, I think what would make a bigger difference would be if you said to them, unless you change your policy, I will no longer give you these donations, and I'll find a better place to put them.
Yeah.
By the way, our Chip Me Not website is accepting donations.
Hey,
if you'd like to send some money our way, we've got a PayPal link right there on the website. We'd love to get some help and get the word out about the cancer issue.
Well, that sounds like a good idea.
All right.
So you're cashless too, huh?
No, actually, I mail checks. I don't have PayPal. So.
Okay. All right. How safe is the web for paying bills?
Well, if you're on a website that is encrypted, then it's safe. HTTPS is what you want to be looking for at the beginning of the website. And in fact, that's one of the things, StartPage, we didn't get a chance to talk about StartPage when I talked about Google, but the private alternative to Google for people who don't want to have all of their searches recorded in one place is StartPage. And StartPage was the first website, the first search engine to offer that HTTPS encryption. And it's kind of cool, George, because what it does, when you're establishing an HTTPS link, S like secure, you know, you kind of put in the regular website and then go back and type in a little S and hit enter. So https://www.startpage.com or bankofamerica.com or whatever it is, when you see that S on there, it tells you that you and the website have established sort of a tunnel to each other and that all of the information flowing both directions is encrypted. And that means, let's say you're in a Starbucks or you're in, you know, some place where you're on a Wi-Fi, or let's say somebody's eavesdropping on your account, all they're going to see is a bunch of encrypted garbage. They won't get a clear data stream. So if you're making a payment, for example, and you're entering in a credit card number or a PayPal account or whatever it might be, if you're on a secure link, then nobody can eavesdrop on that information. It's actually quite secure. Or I should say, it's just as secure as the person on the other end of it, because if you're doing business with a fraud, somebody who's committing fraud, then
right.
Obviously they'll get your social, you know, your credit card number and abuse it. But nobody's going to be able to eavesdrop it that way.
Okay, let's go to Patrick in hometown of Detroit, Wildcard Line. Hey, Patrick, go ahead.
Yeah, George, Catherine. Boy, it's so hard to get through. I've been calling like every night for the past couple of weeks on
yeah.
different subjects.
Yeah.
But anyways, have you ever considered, Catherine, the other prong of the attack, the enticement strategy, which I believe they're already doing, because I saw it on a PBS show, the Create Channel, where they would show people's innovations, their creative ideas and inventions at home and stuff they came up with. Well, this one fella, he thought it was such a great idea to get a chip in his hand, and it was like a magic wand in his hand. You know, you just pass it in front of your favorite electronic toys, your entertainment system, your sound system, your TV, radio, and even your security systems and alarms. your cars and their security system and locks and home locks. And it's just so cool, just a wave of your hand. Are you familiar with that's having an effect? I think they're
That's probably Emil Grafstra, whose hand I actually shook in Wollongong, Australia. In fact, it was a weird experience because he knows all about me and I know all about him. He's got chips in both of his hands and he uses them for his doorway and to turn on his car and turn on his computer and everything else. And as we were introduced, the person organizing the conference said, Emil Grafstra, it's Dr. Catherine Albrecht. And I reached out my hand just instinctively to shake his hand.
Yeah.
Seconds before his hand met mine, I almost jerked my hand away because it dawned on me I'm going to be shaking the hand of someone with a microchip in his hand.
Go ahead.
Well, the one thing I would say is that I actually delivered the keynote presentation at that big event, that big conference, on the microchips and all the information that we're now revealing at chipmenot.com with the cancer stories. And when he got up and gave his talk later, it was interesting because he said, well, you know, and I'm certainly going to be checking my implants for any kind of tumor. So I think those guys are now maybe taking a slightly different mindset about the stuff that they've got in their bodies, that it actually could harm them.
Yeah, but I think they're banking on the appeal to younger people and young adults and hoping that it would spread innocently by word of mouth, you know, less intimidating that way. You know, but people will want to have these. It'll be so cool to use them, you know, for all their electronic needs.
Well, that's certainly how they've got us to adopt all the other tracking technologies, isn't it? I mean, they've got the majority of Americans now with tracking devices on their cars in the form of toll transponders because people are too lazy to stop and pay the toll in cash. So, you know, you make it easier to do the surveillance approach. You make it harder to do the private approach. And it's amazing how many people just unthinkingly, I don't think they're intending to have their privacy invaded. I don't think they're trying to usher in a surveillance society or a big brother police state. But I think through just sort of general ignorance and laziness and kind of going with the flow, they make the flow really easy to go with. And it's only us, you know, people who really kind of buck this tide and stand up and say, no, I'm not going to go where all of the rest of you are going. I'm going to go against the tide. You know, there's a handful of us out there, and I think there needs to be more of us. But, you know, only by speaking out and by resisting and opposing this stuff in front of other people so they can learn, are we going to change any of this? Otherwise, everybody's just going to drift down that easy road to oblivion.
There was a parking garage here in the Los Angeles area. There are no people working there. You use credit cards to get out.
Well, there you have it. Yeah. And obviously they know where you were, you know, and you're going to see that more and more, George, where everywhere you go, there's going to be this sort of non-human, convenient way to interact with the system. But in the process of interacting with this impersonal system, you will be leaving a trace. You'll be leaving some piece of yourself. And when you think about it, you know, once we have all of these systems put together, the easiest way to access all of them would be through an RFID microchip in your hand. You know, you want to get out of the garage, just wave your hand in front of the reader. You want to get on the elevator, just wave your hand in front of the reader.
It seems convenient.
Absolutely. And we're being set up gently, slowly, and, you know, almost without even realizing it, we're being set down that path.
All right, Catherine, I want you to stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with you. And then next hour, Lauren Weinstein joins us for more privacy issues, a different range of issues as well. And then we'll take calls with Lauren in the final hour of the program as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's George at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be right back with more with your calls and Catherine Albrecht on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next Monday, we'll be live from affiliate WOR in New York, the Big Apple, Monday and Tuesday. Looking forward to that with some special guests as well. When we come back, let's take more phone calls with Catherine Albrecht right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Jim, truck driving in New Jersey. Go ahead, Jim. You're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Okay, Jimmy. There he is.
For your brother?
Yep.
Catherine, how you doing?
Yes. Hey there. Good things.
Yeah. The last time I talked to you, Catherine, I called you Madeline Albright, and I'm so sorry.
You know, it happens. It happens. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Anyway, what I wanted to say is the final scenario, the final solution of all this, because of the cyber thievery that's going on and the hackers, is that you really can't have it something that's portable. They're going to end up I mean, they're gonna, that's going to end up failing. So what they're going to end up having to do would be to have, actually put it under our skin to implement this worldwide. Wouldn't that be the solution, wouldn't you think?
Well, you know, like I said, it's going to happen in stages. And one of the things they're going to do with the cyber thievery and all the spam and the email and the child porn and all the stuff that's on the Internet is you'll have to show some form of ID in order to log on to the Internet. So that's definitely going to be coming. In fact, we know of lots of corporations working together in tandem to make that happen right now.
Then they'll know exactly who you are. Right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, you won't be able to post an anonymous email or write an or post a web blog post without people knowing exactly who you are. And there's going to be an argument that for reasons of national security, they need to know who everybody is all the time on the Internet. So that's going to be one piece of this. And then I think that argument, that reasoning is going to expand further and further. Think about it right now. You can't get on an Amtrak train without showing ID. You can't buy a Greyhound bus ticket across the country without showing ID. Why? What are you going to do on the Greyhound train, really? So the reality is they're restricting what we can do to fewer and fewer things without showing identification, and they're using a security justification for that. But if you think about the millions and millions of people who travel by airplane, by train, by bus, who commit no crime at all, it makes no sense for all of us to be showing ID to engage in those behaviors. All they need to do, I mean, if they scan your bag and you don't have a weapon, that's the end of the story. Boom, let people on, let people go about their business and travel privately. But they're getting us ready for a time when you won't be able to buy, you won't be able to sell, you won't be able to get in your car and drive anonymously, you won't be able to do anything without the system watching you. And at that point, once it becomes removable, once you find a way to kind of get this thing off of you or away from you, I believe it's at that point that they're going to say, yeah, we want it incorporated into your body. And that's when you get implants or whatever it's going to be. It's going to be something in or on the body. We know that from the Bible.
In your opinion, Catherine, what's the big reason for all of this? Is it truly to protect us, to, you know, to catch the evil ones? Or is it really an invasion of privacy?
Well, it's power, George. You know, it's power. People have always wanted power. And when you have a government that is as corrupt and out of control as our government, they know that people are sharpening their knives for them. They know it. They feel it. And when you get into a situation like that, whether it is in Stalin's Soviet Union, whether it is in communist China, wherever it is, when you get into a situation where the government is so oppressive and repugnant to the people that the people want to remove it from power, then that government begins using security as a justification. They'll point to somebody out there, that guy in a turban, that guy across the border, whoever it is, they'll point to somebody out there, they'll find a scapegoat, and they will use that scapegoat to justify putting in place all of the powers that they want for themselves, to protect themselves, not against the terrorist or the Mexican or the foreigner, but to protect themselves against us. And that's really what happens when governments get to this point of collapse and decay, is it becomes an arms race. How quickly can the government put the pieces in place to oppress and tamp down the growing opposition among their own people? And the only justification they can use to do that is by pointing to guys outside of their borders. And most people, I hate to say it, are totally willing to go along with that because they won't open their eyes and see what's happening.
Okay, back to the phones we go. We'll go to Sedona, Arizona. It's Blair on Coast to Coast. Hi, Blair.
Hi, George. You know, Catherine, 80% of us Americans don't have passports, too. That adds to what you just said.
Well, you know, the thing about the passport, though, is they've found a way to capitalize on that. Because now if you want to leave your country and come back home, you have to have a passport, even if you're just driving into Canada or Mexico. And because most people don't want to apply for a State Department passport with the special passport photo and all the rigmarole, they're getting people to sign up for these things called enhanced driver's licenses. And those are the ones being offered in border states. And please, Coast to Coast listeners, don't you dare get one, or I will personally come and take it away from you and cut it up. Because those are the ID cards that can be read from 60 feet away by any government official with no encryption, and not only government officials, anybody with an RFID reader. And if you're in a Walmart store, the underwear shelf, I'm not making this up, the underwear shelf can read that enhanced driver's license right through your pocket or your purse as you're standing in front of the shelf in Walmart. That's how bad those things are. And they're doing that because they know people don't want to sign up for passports. And so they're making it, quote unquote, easy and convenient for them to incorporate the passport into their driver's license. But what people don't know, it's a 60-foot read range, unencrypted, wide-open RFID tracking device, and it's evil.
Speaking of Walmart, the RFID tags on men's pants you reported, you know, the working Joes that get DWIs and drug busts, potentially law enforcement reports successful apprehensions via RFID, then a media campaign begins to create a new law mandating, right?
Good
well,
point,
you know, that, what's going to happen, and let me make my prediction, because I'm going to put on my conspiracy hat here for a minute.
No.
I believe that Homeland Security has intentionally chosen the least secure form of RFID possible to incorporate into those driver's licenses. And I believe the reason they've done it is because they know that Walmart is investing billions of dollars. All these corporations are investing billions of dollars to create a tracking infrastructure in doorways, floors, ceilings, shelving, everywhere else, that will track products. And so if you've got the Walmart doorway tracking products, and then you take that same product tag and you put it in a driver's license, then when you walk through the Walmart doorway or you stand in front of the Walmart underwear or men's jeans shelf, it's going to be tracking you too. And then once they've got that in place, see, the government can rely on the private sector to build the tracking infrastructure. And then the government issues you a tag that just happens to fit right into that tracking infrastructure. And then once you're tracked every single place you go by the private sector, because that's coming, then the government says, you know, hand us over the records. And voila, overnight, like adding hot water to a cup of soup, instantly, overnight, you will have a total surveillance society. And it's coming because we know Janet Napolitano, head of Homeland Security, said she wants all of our driver's licenses to have RFID in them, to pattern them after the enhanced driver's license. And when that happens, and Walmart and every shopping mall and theater and museum and library and every other place in the country has installed its own RFID readers to manage its own inventory, we will become the inventory being managed overnight.
When you go through security, the TSA person has a little flashlight now, and he's looking at your driver's license. What is he looking for?
Well, they're looking at your driver's license or your passport, and they're looking for special ink that's embedded in there. They've got about 15 different mechanisms to prevent counterfeiting. And I actually don't have a problem with that. The thing that I do have a problem with is embedding the RFID tag in there, because most people, if it's encrypted, you have no way of even knowing what's on it. So the idea that there would be some kind of ultraviolet ink in there and he's shining a light, that's not bugging me so much. As long as there's no RFID in there, I'm cool.
Okay, next up we go to David. He's truck driving in Colorado. Go ahead, David.
Good evening, Kevin. George, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, David.
Good. I was wondering if you were aware of another business unit of Verichip known as Verimed.
Well, Verimed is the Verichip's product. They've given themselves a million different names over the years, but it's still the Verichip. And the Verimed is the Verichip, now known as the Positive ID Corporation, but it's their idea of taking their tired old implantable microchip, which, by the way, is identical to the dog chip, and using it for medical records purposes. But it's basically just the Verichip. They've tried to market it for building security, and then they found that wouldn't work because they could be so easily cloned. They tried to market them for medical purposes, for diabetics and people with medical conditions. That didn't work when it turned out that they actually caused more medical problems than they solved with the cancer issue. So I think the Verimed, the Verichip, the whole company, I think, is dead in the water, and thank goodness.
Why'd they change their name so often or the products?
You know, to be honest with you, I think it's to try to evade all of the online blogs through the stock sites. Because I used to follow them on Google Finance, or excuse me, Google. No, I didn't say that. I go to StartPage.com, not Google. I used to follow them on finance.yahoo.com. There's a great sort of a message board dogging those guys. And you would have, you know, a couple, maybe 2 years worth of threads detailing every shenanigan, every illegal activity, every scandal. And then they'd change their name and those message boards would all vanish and they'd have a clean slate. So that's all. That's the only thing I can figure is it lets them start over and over and dupe a new set of investors.
Okay, we go now east of the Rockies, Wanda in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Wanda.
Hi, George. I really like your show. I listen a lot.
Well, thank you.
And hi, Catherine.
Hey, Wanda.
I was calling because I just ordered a new laptop computer, and it came with, you know, the little camera that's on it and the whole new Windows 7 system.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I'm wondering if I haven't gotten on the Skype yet. I just got the computer about 2 weeks ago. If that is also a tracking device.
Well, you know, it's possible to install spyware on someone's computer remotely. You just land on the wrong website that could literally turn on your camera on your computer and use it to watch what's going on in your room. So if you're concerned about that, if you don't have, you know, a firewall up and lots of antivirus software, if you're not checking for that regularly, it may sound paranoid, but I actually have a piece of tape over the camera on my computer.
Okay, well, I read your book about a year ago, year and a half ago, and I want to pull it back out again because I have done a lot of the things that you said, you know, that we should do, and that was just new to me, and I thought, you know, every time I cut the computer on, a little light comes on, a little red light.
Yeah, you know, those cameras are make me very uneasy, and there was that case where a student actually had a laptop issued by his school, and it turns out that the school was using the cameras in there to take photographs and video of these kids in their homes. And they actually posted a picture on the website. There was a lawsuit over this, and the parents said, look at this scandalous picture. It was a picture of the kid sleeping in his own bed, and the school had logged on remotely, turned on the camera on his laptop and used it to photograph what he was doing in his room. Talk about repulsive. So if you want to avoid that, if you've got one of these laptops with a camera, put a piece of opaque tape, just a little piece of masking tape, over the camera, and that way even if somebody turns it on, they can't see anything but the other side of the tape.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate all that you're doing for the American
Well, well thank you, and pull that copy of Spy Chips off the shelf and reread it, because everything we talked about back then is all happening today. So bless you for reading it. Thank you.
Catherine, these GPS devices that are in these newer cell phones now with the iPhone apps and the Droid apps,
yes.
Can they track you that way?
That's a big story. You know, those phones, if you use them to take a photograph, actually embed the GPS coordinates, the latitude and longitude numbers of where you were standing when you took the photo. And people need to understand
what?
That. In fact, yeah, if you take a picture, let's say you take your new iPhone or your new smartphone,
right,
smart camera.
Yeah, and you go to the LA Kings hockey game or something.
No, you go in your backyard and you take a picture of your kids and you post it on the internet, and some creep takes a look and goes, wow, those kids are cute. They can get into the file of that photograph and determine your precise location. It's like putting a pin on a map.
That's
so
amazing.
If you want to get rid of that, you need to go into your cell phone's instructions and disable the geotagging or geolocating feature on your phone and on the camera.
James,
and that's extremely important.
James from Nebraska sends a text talking of new technology, and he wants to know, is it true the government can get information on your cell phone even if you have it turned off?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, they can turn it on. They can turn it on and listen through the cell phone turned on and then turn it off again when you're not looking. So, yeah, there's a lot you can do with cell phones. In fact, on my radio show, I do a daily radio show, CatherineAlbrecht.com, if people want to check it out.
Cell phones are convenient, though, aren't they?
Yeah, we covered a patent that Apple filed on its iPhone. And they have actually patented a way to use the phone to try to figure out who's using it, capture a snippet of your voice, send it into Apple for voice analysis, turn on the camera and take secret pictures so they can figure out where you are, even using the phone's microphone to listen to your heartbeat, which turns out to be a unique biometric identifier. So, you know, you're looking at that going, what are you guys thinking? Where do you get these ideas? That's disgusting. Now, fortunately, that's just a patent, but, you know, are they incorporating it? We don't know. They wouldn't tell us if they did, I'm sure.
All right, next up we go to San Francisco, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Pamela.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a friend that went to jail, and he said that they were pointing laser beams in his eyes. And he asked the deputy, what are you doing? And the deputy said that they were putting chips in him for tracking. And then he started getting upset, and he said, well, what the hell? You're not going to put chips in me. And he started getting really upset. And so the deputy started laughing at him. And another deputy said, oh, relax. We're not putting chips in you. This is just another way to ID you, kind of like a fingerprint.
Well, it sounds like they were messing with your friend and trying to scare him. And don't fall for it when people say, hey, they're going to put a microchip in you, because most of these applications wouldn't, even if they did, it would be useless for them because they don't have any read range. But what they were probably doing was iris scanning your friend. And in fact, now cops in parts of Texas, when they pull over motorists, can actually use these iris scanners to get an ID. So they actually, it feels like a laser beam going into your eye. It's actually just a little light that's shining onto the iris of your eye and actually capturing an image of your eye, which is as unique, apparently, as your fingerprint.
Okay, one more quick call before we bring in Lauren Weinstein. Let's go to Glendale, California. It's Ashley's turn on the wild card line. Go ahead, Ashley.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to ask, well, thanks to your guest for being on.
Sure.
And I would like to ask, what does she really recommend that we do to, if we want to stay a more cash-based person or stay away from this direction, what can we do?
Well, that's why I've made such a point of supporting companies that do the right thing. So that's why I don't shop at stores that have shopper cards. And living in Glendale, you've got great options. There's lots of ethnic markets and lots of local stores that you can shop at. You don't have to shop, you know, at the big Safeways or the Vons or wherever they have the supermarket shopper cards. Stay off of Google. Don't use Gmail. They're reading all of your email if you have a Gmail account. Use startpage.com, which is the private search engine alternative to Google, and I'll spell that, S-T-A-R-T, like start, page, P-A-G-E, like page, startpage.com. And that is the private search engine alternative to Google. And I'm telling everybody, break the habit. You know, break the shopper card habit. Break the toll transponder habit. You know, in Glendale, you don't have those. But in other parts of the country, people just have these tracking devices right on their windshields. Take it off. Send it back to the company. Put some cash in your pocket and use the cash. Don't pull out your credit card every time somebody asks you to. Pay cash. You know, there's simple things that we can do to try to prevent that 80% from taking over. You know, once 80% of the world is using Google and nobody's using StartPage, StartPage will go away and then you won't have a private option. See, that's the kind of things people need to think about. Once everybody's shopping at the Safeways and the Vons, there won't be any other stores to shop at that aren't surveilling your purchases. So lots of things you can do. In our book, Spy Chips, we have a whole bunch of information and tips in the last chapter. And then if you want to listen to my daily radio show, KatherineAlbrecht.com, we talk about this stuff all the time, and I welcome callers, and I'm on every weekday afternoon.
Very good. Thanks, Catherine. And we'll be back in just a moment with Lauren Weinstein. Those of you who have been trying to call, we will take calls in our final hour with Lauren as we continue with our special two-part program on privacy right here on Coast to Coast AM.